Hey, Hashtag Am Writing listeners. This is KJ, and this episode of Hashtag Am Writing is, as always, supported by our friends at Author Accelerator. We love Author Accelerator. They are on a mission to help writers write books worth reading. They do that by training book coaches to support writers through the entire creative process, and by matching writers of fiction, nonfiction, and memoir with the right coach to help them reach their goals. You can find out more at authoraccelerator.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about getting your writing done, be it fiction, nonfiction, proposals, pitches, essays, all the things. Yeah, I feel like I usually say something else here.
Nope, no, that was it.
Okay, good.
And I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure, and you can find my writing at various places, including the New York Times and the Atlantic, and I have a book coming out in April of 2021 called The Addiction Inoculation that just went into copy edits. It's like, woohoo, off my desk for real. Yay!
That is so woohoo.
I have to say, so I am in the best mood today. I have not been in the best mood this week, but today I am in the best mood because I am fangirling over our guest today. We have Maria Konnikova with us. She is, I first met Maria because I fangirled. I think I sent a fan email and we sort of corresponded a little bit, and I got to meet her in person and got to go to one of her book events. She is a writer for The New Yorker, which is where I first started reading her stuff. And she has a bunch of books out, including, well, the one that we're going to talk about today, because it's coming out soon, is called The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. And that one is about poker and psychology and all kinds of good stuff we'll get into. But my students were the biggest fans of one of her other books, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. And she has another book called The Confidence Game, which is about how we as humans get conned so easily and why we don't need to feel that stupid for it, because it's kind of part of our nature. So welcome, Maria. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we're having a chance to do this. I've been a fan of yours for many years, and you know, I've never had a chance to do a podcast with you. So I'm so glad to be speaking to both of you.
Well, and this new book has been a super long time coming, but we'll get to that in just 1 second. I want to talk about the path. I mean, that's the main reason I wanted to have you on today, is because sometimes the path to a book doesn't look exactly like we thought it was going to. But we would love to know, we always like to know, our listeners are big into the nuts and bolts of the how you work and how you got started. So I'd love to start with the nerdy details. How did you get started as a writer? And especially, you know, how did you sort of emerge on the national stage with The New Yorker?
So I got started as a writer when I was approximately, I would say, 6 years old. I announced, apparently, I don't remember this, but according to everyone in my family, they've independently shared this story, so I'm guessing it actually happened. At some point, I announced to the whole dinner table that I was going to be a writer when I grew up. So I apparently was going to be a writer from around the age of 6. I did write my first book then. It was a book about trolls. I didn't know how to draw, so I had a friend of mine illustrate the little troll dolls, and I wrote the text. I still remember I tried to copy her drawings.
Your first creative partnership. I love it.
Yes, exactly. And I would like to report for the record that I still don't know how to draw, and I still can't draw a stick figure, so that part has not changed at all. But more seriously, I wanted to be a writer when I was younger, but then I got a little bit discouraged because I started reading all of these just incredible books, incredible fiction writers, incredible nonfiction writers. And I thought, oh my God, I can never do this. I want to do it, but I can't. And so I got really scared and decided that I was going to study something else in college. So I decided to study psychology and political science. But then I just, something about writing kept pulling me back. And so I started taking a fiction workshop. I applied. I didn't tell anyone that I was applying to this because I didn't want to have to tell them if I got rejected. I got accepted and ended up kind of graduating with a fiction portfolio as well. And didn't have really any money. We don't, you know, didn't come from a wealthy family. Didn't have any kind of financial support. Had a lot of emotional support from my parents, but no financial support. And so when everyone else was doing kind of recruiting, corporate recruiting, applying to law school, applying to med school, I said, I want to be a writer. And it felt like a very scary and lonely thing to say. And within my first year out of college, I went through like 5 or 6 different careers. I worked in advertising as a copywriter. I ended up quitting because it was just totally soul sucking and I hated it. Then I was a bartender briefly, and that didn't work out very well. I mean, I was such a total cliche, you know, the young writer living in the West Village in a tiny 90 square foot studio, working as a bartender and trying to write during the day. But in New York, last call is at 4 a.m. So I wouldn't get home until like 6 a.m. after, you know, you wash up and clean up the bar. Then I just slept all day. So not a lot of writing got done. But eventually, you know, I was able to start getting to start kind of writing more seriously. I worked in television as a producer, but I didn't actually start having the creative space to work on my own writing until I went to grad school. So I decided to get a PhD in psychology, all the while knowing that I wanted to be a writer and that I didn't actually want to go into academia. I got very lucky. I had an advisor who was open to that, who said, you know what, I wouldn't go into academia either these days. It's a horrible place. And so he just took me on and didn't put any pressure on me. And I started freelancing just, you know, I was writing every single day at that point for many years, but I finally started trying to submit pieces places. A few got accepted. Then I got a few pieces accepted by Scientific American. A few editors really encouraged me and said that they were really enjoying my writing. And I think my big breakthrough was when I decided to write a piece about mindfulness and was looking for a way to illustrate it. And thought about Sherlock Holmes, thought about a scene from Sherlock Holmes. Jess, you mentioned Mastermind. So this is actually the genesis of Mastermind. This is how Mastermind was born. So I remember the scene from one of the Holmes stories where Holmes asks Watson how many steps lead up to 221B Baker Street, and Watson doesn't know. And Holmes says, that's the difference between us. You only see, I both see and observe. And that had just stuck in my brain somehow from childhood. And I looked it up. I Googled it because I couldn't remember the scene. I couldn't remember the story. Ended up rereading it and was like, this is perfect. This is such a perfect illustration of mindfulness. Wrote the article. It did incredibly well. My editor was like, hey, you should write, you know, this is really good. And then I started rereading the Sherlock Holmes stories because I really enjoyed the one I'd read. And I thought, oh, my God, this is just a psychological goldmine. And so then I started doing a few columns, and that was the genesis of the book. And I got very lucky that I was able to sell that book while I was in grad school. So that was kind of the beginning of my writing career. Then that book gave me a platform where I had, you know, I had excerpts and pieces that ran in a lot of different publications. The New York Times got the attention of The New Yorker, who I'd been unsuccessfully pitching for years, finally got something there. And kind of that's the rest kind of is I would like to say the rest is history, but it's the rest has been hard work ever since.
Well, KJ, actually, this was a big, the New Yorker was a huge bucket item for KJ, and she had a humor piece co-written with Wendy Ahrens this year that got into the New Yorker Digital, and it was a big day. I mean, the day that you hit the New Yorker, I mean, it's like, that's just incredible. And that's where I became familiar with your writing. And the wonderful thing about psychology is it is such a rich perspective to start writing about lots of different things, which is where, you know, you've gone with this. And, you know, the confidence game looks at, you know, like how exactly we as humans are so apt to be conned by other people. And, you know, that's one of the things I love so much about your work is it's nominally about one thing, but it's really about who we are as humans. And that sort of leads us to the book that is coming out really soon, The Biggest Bluff. And how did your idea for that book start?
The Biggest Bluff is very, very different from my prior two books, which were kind of born out of research and out of, you know, journalistic interest. The Biggest Bluff was actually born out of a much more personal spot. So when The Confidence Game came out, you know, it was really wonderful. You know, it did well. Everything was really exciting. I was very happy. And then in the, like, a few months after that, a lot of kind of bad stuff, not great stuff, started happening to my family. I got really sick. I got some unknown autoimmune condition where basically I just developed allergies to everything. I basically couldn't wear clothes. Like, if anything that was not the softest cotton touched my skin, I would just break out in hives all over my body. And no one knew what was going on. My grandmother died. My mom lost her job. My husband lost his job. Just all at once, all of these things were happening. And it made me just stop for a second and realize, you know what? So much of our lives is just due to dumb luck, or a lack thereof. And, you know, you can think you're very smart and you work really hard and, you know, all of these things are happening and you almost feel like, oh, this is great. Like, I've really worked hard for it. And you kind of forget that when things are going well, you forget that a lot of it is you got lucky too, right? There's a huge element of luck in all of this. And it just made me just stop and think about just how much of our lives we don't actually control and how big a role luck plays in everything. And so I thought, I want to write a book about this. But as you both know, you know, that's not the topic of a book. If I were to say, you know, to an editor, I'd like to write about luck. I think that pitch would get thrown out immediately because that's, I mean, what is that? That's like a life epic.
Yeah.
So I needed a way in. And what I always do, since we're talking about writing process, the first step of my writing process, no matter what I'm working on, it can be the shortest piece in the world for like a newspaper column. It can be a magazine piece. It can be a book. My first step is always reading. I read a lot. And when you read one of my pieces, you might not always realize it. To me, the biggest compliment is when someone dismisses my work and says, oh, well, this is all very intuitive. It makes total sense. I knew it already. Why did you even write this? I'm like, good. I did my work well. I made it sound so easy and so intuitive that you thought that I didn't do anything. But really, every single sentence has a ton of research behind it. And I've done, at that point, you know, if I cite two studies, I've read at least 20 studies and sometimes hundreds of them. So I just started reading a lot, reading about luck, reading about chance, and came across John von Neumann's theory of games. Someone recommended it to me, said, you know, if you're interested in chance, check out game theory. And realized that John von Neumann, who's kind of this brilliant mathematician, polymath of the 20th century, that game theory was inspired by poker. So he was a poker player, and he actually realized that if he could solve that game, he would have kind of a map for solving the world. And I had never played poker. I had no interest in poker whatsoever, but I was like, oh, interesting. Like, what is this poker thing of which you speak? Maybe I should read up on it a little bit. And that's actually how the germ of the idea for the book was born. And then I started reading about poker and I thought, wow, you know what? This could actually be something. You know, John von Neumann wasn't a stupid guy. Maybe he had something with this whole poker idea. So I thought, why don't I actually, because the start of this book is so personal, why don't I make it more personal and actually learn to play poker, find someone who will teach me, and have that be the backbone of this exploration, broader exploration of luck and the role it plays in our lives.
That's the coolest part of this for me. Like when I started the book and I realized that I don't play poker, I don't know much about poker, and putting myself out there to learn how to play poker and get good at it is a terrifying idea to me. I'm just strategy, that kind of thing. I don't really play chess. You know, when I play, even we were playing Settlers of Catan at dinner recently, and my son, who's studying economics and math, likes to play with futures. He's got all these crazy econ rules about how we're supposed to play, and I'm just in it for fun, and I really don't care if I win or lose. So this idea of putting yourself out there with poker, especially going to one of the best, you know, this coach that you got who is famous, and somehow convincing him to become your coach, just the whole entire thing made me nauseous and made me admire you so much for your guts to try this thing that you'd never tried before. And you became really, really good at it. And this is what I really love to talk about, is the path to writing a book, because I thought that this was going to be a pretty simple story in terms of, oh, cool. Okay, cool. So she researches how to play poker. She learns how to play poker. She gets an idea of how poker works. She writes the book, and the book comes out in 2018. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened. Could you tell us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. Well, first of all, yeah, I agree with you that I just got so insanely lucky that I somehow not just found the right person to coach me, but that he agreed. I mean, that was such a stroke of luck, because there are lots of great poker players and I could have chosen so many that it would have just been disastrous. But I happened to choose one who ended up being kind of this Yoda-like mentor who became a close friend and who was able to train me and really speak my language in a way that I think a lot of people wouldn't have been able to do.
He was interested in your approach because you were coming at it from a psychology perspective and not the sort of math perspective, which is, as I understand, is the way that most people sort of want to try to crack it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's also his approach. And he was really interested to try to figure out, you know, well, can that approach work from someone? Because he's been playing since the 80s. You know, he's been the best for a long time. And so he was, I think, very interested in seeing, well, can someone completely new with this kind of background, can they make it work? Because that's a really interesting illustration of, you know, how powerful psychology can really be. And I think that you see it, I think, these days in a lot of different disciplines, even in writing, where people are really bowing down to kind of the mathematics and the quantification of everything. You know, can we figure out the correct algorithm for this? You know, how do people read? On page 17, you need this, you know, people's right. attention, blah, blah, blah. This is the model. And so I think that my approach was kind of a counterweight to that, if it could be successful. And we had no idea. I mean, I had no idea if I would like poker, if I would have any aptitude for it. I mean, no one knew what this was going to turn out to be. It didn't really matter for the book, because it's not like I said, I'm going to set out to, right. you know, win the biggest, you know, it was going to be a learning journey, and I was going to write the book no matter what happened.
Well, and that's exciting. I mean, you're writing a book and, you know, this could go anywhere, and you're just sort of, you know, doing the best you can. And the story could be that this isn't the way to hack poker and you failed miserably. That is actually not what happened. You actually succeeded wonderfully. And, but that's sort of the thrill of a project like this. But was your editor open to that sort of open-ended I mean, when I write a book proposal, I'm like, here are all the chapter summaries and I know exactly where this is going. Did you have a proposal that looked like that? Or did you have a proposal that said, well, this is a choose your own adventure version, you know, yeah. If this happens, then I'll go in this direction.
So a little bit of both. I did choose an editor who was very open-minded. I'd never worked with him before. His name was his name is Scott Moyers, and I once again lucked out. He ended up being just the perfect editor for this. But I chose him because he seemed to really get what I was doing, and was excited about it, and seemed to offer the right balance of, you know, I will be here whenever you need, but you can kind of do what you need to do. In terms of my proposal, I actually started playing and studying with Eric and learning, and did that for a number of months before I even submitted the proposal and sold the book. So I went out on a total limb because I felt like in order to write the proposal, I needed to have at least some narrative already, at least some exposure. I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize that, you know, that how much writing and work goes into a book before you even submit
right.
the proposal.
We actually talk about that a lot. We've talked about the fact yeah. that the proposal, once from the time I realized what the addiction inoculation was, like the fact that I was mm-hmm. going to write this book, it was a full year until that proposal went off to my editor.
Yeah.
So there's you have to know the landscape.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I started that first. And so I was able to write, kind of a sample chapter of the beginning of the narrative. By the way, it's not at all what ended up being the right. opening pages of the book. But I was able to kind of do that and have this kind of meaty first chapter where you could see the approach that I was going to take. But after that, I mean, there was no outline. I had some proposed chapters, none of which ended up happening. So this book, more than anything, I don't ever write from outline. I'm a really bad outliner. I'm a very disorganized person. So I never recommend my writing process to anyone because it stresses me out, but I can't do anything about it. It's how I've always written. And every time I've tried to change it, it hasn't worked. But, that aside, this book, more so than anything I've ever done, just completely went into a totally different direction from any outline, any kind of proposed chapter drafts. I mean, basically my proposal, the only thing that was true about my proposal was the spirit of the thing and the voice and the way that I was going to approach the story, and everything else, everything that I thought I was going to do, I didn't do. And I could have never predicted that I would be, you know, that I would find myself in Macau or in Monte Carlo. I never, you know, never in a million years was that a path that I could have foreseen for myself. So the book ended up being just a totally different animal.
Hey, all, it's KJ, back with something new. We are interrupting this episode to announce our new sponsor, Dabble. You might have heard us mention Dabble when it first came out. It's software for writers with some amazing features for getting organized that Serena and I both love. And it is incredibly easy and intuitive to use. You will hear more about why in future episodes, but meanwhile, why not go check it out for yourself? Head to dabblewriter.com for a free trial, and then please pop into the #AmWriting Facebook group and tell us what you think. We genuinely love this thing, and that is why it is here mid-episode as our new sponsor. And that's why we're so excited to share it with you, because we love it, and we thought you might like it too. We would love to hear if we were right. All right, back to the show.
Were you sending anything off to your editor during this process, or was your editor just sort of hanging out and listening and going, where? I wonder what book I bought.
The latter. I am not someone who likes anyone looking over my shoulder. I never give any works in progress to anyone to read. I actually have zero readers. I know a lot of people would think that that's crazy. And most of my favorite writers have a few readers they really trust. But I just, some, I can't work that way. And I can't.
I don't either. I don't have readers either. My agent edits chapters before they go to my editor. But for the most part, no one reads until it's done.
So my agent didn't even see the book. I don't send it to anyone. And I don't, because I don't, I never write chronologically. I never write a piece from beginning to end. That's just not how my brain works. So even if it's a short piece, I don't think I've ever written anything from beginning to end. Wow. But especially books. So everything just kind of somehow emerges eventually. And I put it together like puzzle pieces almost.
So the story, for those people who don't know the story of the book. So I knew this book was coming, and then I kept seeing pictures of you on Instagram at poker tournaments. And at a certain point, you realize that this is more than a thought experiment. This is you becoming a professional poker player. Like, you were so good at it that it became something else. Was that sort of a natural decision to sort of take a break from writing the book to ride along and see how your poker career went? Or was that scary for you?
Of course it was scary. This whole thing was scary. I mean, in order to do this, I've never gone on book leave before. So my first two books, you know, I was with Mastermind, I was in grad school. And then with The Confidence Game, I was still, you know, the whole time I was writing, I was submitting, you know, multiple pieces for the New Yorker, you know, filling my word counts. I was not taking any time off. And for this, I just realized that this was going to be something totally different. And so I left. I just said, okay, you know, I have to go, you know, I have to freeze all of my contracts and I have to just dive in 100% or else this isn't going to work. Wow. And that was always going to be the case for some amount of time. But then what ended up happening was I realized that I was good at this. And then, you know, miracle of all miracles, I ended up winning a major international tournament. And then getting a poker sponsorship, and I realized that this was a totally different story. And so, you know, I was very lucky that my editor at Penguin said, when I said, hey, so the book might be a few years late, he just said, you know what? Do what you got to do. This is great for the book. You do what you need to do. Just, you know, give me the best book you can when you're ready to give it to me. So many editors would not have been that cool. I was so lucky that that was his attitude. He was like, look, you know, this is not a time-sensitive book. It's not like someone can scoop you on it. This is your story.
Well, the other thing that would have made an editor really nervous and did make my editor very nervous was leaving the thing that people know you for. Like, your platform at the mm-hmm. New Yorker, you know, is what sort of helps keep you in people's mind as a writer. And so stepping mm-hmm. off of that platform must have been frightening as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, all of it was. And I think all of this entire process has been kind of the most uncertain and scary one that that I've ever undertaken as a writer. But I think the beauty of poker is the thing that it teaches you is to be comfortable with uncertainty, be comfortable with not knowing, be comfortable with those moments of just completely saying, well, what in the world is going to happen? It's scary. I'm not going to say that all of a sudden I'm not scared. Listen, I'm still scared. I still don't know, you know, whether my decisions were correct or not. But I've realized that the best thing I can do is to just have the attitude that, you know, let me make the best decision I possibly can right now. And yeah, you know, it's scary. And yeah, my platform's going to change. And yeah, all of these things are going to change. But you know what? No one knows what's going to happen tomorrow anyway. So I might as well just try to make the best of it.
I would have loved to have seen young Maria in undergraduate school at Harvard, and I would love to have gone up to that person and said, here's the deal. In a while, in a bunch of years, you're going to make over $300,000 in tournament winnings by being a poker player. And I think young Maria's head might have exploded.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I am not a games player. You know, when you were saying about Catan, that's my, I'm always so nervous when I spend time with my nieces and nephews. They love that game. I'm like, oh my God, don't make me play. Don't make me play.
I get laughed at even at the beginning where you have to select where you're going to put your little houses and roads. My son, he'll say these things like, really? Are you serious? No, you're putting me on now. Because I'm in it just to be with them, and I really don't have a lot of strategy. And even the game Mastermind, my husband ruined for me because he said, no, you just play it as a process of elimination and then it's over. And I'm like, but you have now ruined the entire game of Mastermind for me.
Yep. So yeah, I'm not a games player, and you know, I also don't play chess. My chess career ended in fourth grade when I was beaten in my first ever chess match by a kindergartner, and I was embarrassed that I was done. I was done with the game for good. But yes, if you had told teenage Maria that she was going to do this, I would have laughed at you. Listen, if you had told me even, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said, what are you talking about? I'm a writer. And I'm still a writer, but I also somehow became a poker player.
Well, and since you brought it up, I have to ask, so health-wise, you doing better?
I am. I mean, it was completely so unresolved. So I had just crazy, my hormone levels were insane. No one knew. I got tested for, you know, they thought that I might have a tumor or something like that. But, you know, no one really knew what in the world was going on. And it's somehow at some point resolved after a year of just being on these massive steroids and all of these horrible medications that made me just want to fall asleep all the time. It was not pleasant. But knock on wood, I hope they don't come back. But because it was never diagnosed, who in the world knows?
Yeah. Well, and so I have to ask, like, you. So we get to the end of this journey. Do you feel like you've been able to at least crack, if not poker itself, parts of yourself that made you successful at poker?
Absolutely, absolutely. I do think that poker, the reason I fell in love with the game is because of what it taught me about myself and about my own mind and about, you know, my strengths, my weaknesses, and how I can work through them, because it's become almost like a laboratory for me to be able to experiment with different parts of myself. I mean, to give you one example, I always considered myself, at least after a while, I was, you know, when I was in school, like in elementary school, in high school, I never felt completely at home. I was an immigrant. At the beginning, I didn't speak any English at all. There were just a lot of things that never made me feel like, you know, I'm on top of it. But starting in college, you know, I really felt like my self-confidence had developed a bit, that I was feeling kind of more in control of myself, that I was becoming a stronger person. And then, you know, when I started getting some professional success, I was like, you know, this is great, like I can do this. And what diving into poker made me realize is that, hell no, like all of those insecurities, they never went away. And I had to confront this part of myself that I didn't even realize existed. I realized just how, you know, how non-confrontational I was. And how many times I let people just get their way because I didn't want to say anything, how little I spoke up for myself in a lot of different situations, how often I was just much more passive. And it made me start questioning, like, hey, you know, how many times have people taken advantage of you and you didn't even realize it? How many times has this happened? It was not, I mean, that's not a very pleasant thing to realize about yourself.
You would think that you would have mined that fully in Confidence Game, and so I'm a little relieved that you didn't go into this with a complete, you know, I've cracked this entire thing, forget it, I understand the whole thing now, I understand psychology, I understand myself. But the cool thing about this book is that I love the whole going out on a limb and being willing mm-hmm. to look back at yourself and think about, you know, how you think and how others think and how you can adapt your psychology to, as you say in the book, to master yourself and attempt to master a game. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful book. I can't recommend it highly enough. You have, by the way, congratulations on the amazing advance praise you got for the book from some of our favorite writers, from Gretchen Rubin and Charles Duhigg and David Epstein and Eric Larson. It's a great book, and I think everyone who's listening to this, if you're at all interested, it's not about poker. It's about psychology and writing and the process of learning more about yourself. So I think all of our listeners will adore it. Speaking of books that we love, and poor KJ, I've just talked all over KJ. She's
No, you were brilliant. Well, I didn't want to interrupt. I only have one final thought, which is something that we talk about a lot on the podcast. It cracks me up, Maria, that you kept saying, "I got so lucky, I got so lucky," when of all people, you know how much you control your luck. You know, you picked that editor, you gained these skills, you built this for yourself. You didn't just get lucky, you worked your butt off.
I did.
So it just cracked. I kept laughing. Yeah, luck, yeah, right.
Right.
You know what?
I mean, luck is part of it. We know it is. But there's other stuff in there too.
I mean, obviously I did work hard, but I also got so lucky. I mean, I'm just so immensely grateful for the opportunities that I was able to have. So many people work hard and, you know, it doesn't always work out. So I want to remember every single day to just take a moment and feel grateful.
Oh, absolutely.
For having everything that I have.
That is fantastic, but make sure you also take a moment in the spirit of white men everywhere to go, and I am awesome.
I actually think it's really, really interesting. You say you got so lucky that you picked the right coach, but I think, you know, you more than anyone else know that there was something that drew you to this person. Even if you didn't fully understand the landscape of who's who in poker, there was something that drew you to this person and made you approach him as opposed to other people. And who knows? Maybe there were some subconscious cues there leading you in the right direction.
For sure.
But boy, it's a good partnership.
It is.
It's a great partnership.
It is. And I think that you definitely, though, you're onto something there, because I watched, you know, the way I picked him is I read, you know, I looked at different players and came up with a list of like, okay, these are the players who are considered some of the best of all time. Then I watched a lot of videos, and he just came across as the nicest person and the person that I'd actually want to spend time with. And that was really a lot of the basis of my approaching him, that, you know what, you seem like a good guy. And he is. He ended up being such just a good human being.
I have to say, in my limited exposure to poker, which I think has been like in hotel rooms when I'm out on speaking stuff, you know, happening on a poker thing, there are some unique people in the poker world. There are some people who I can, and maybe it's just their faces when they're playing poker, but there are some people there that have, you know, they're very sort of, you can tell they're very set rules and they like things the way they like it. And so I think it's also very lucky that you came across someone that you jibed well with.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to what we've been reading, because we got to wrap things up. I could talk to you for hours, but we do have to wrap things up. So what have you been reading? Anything interesting you want to recommend?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really hard to be releasing books right now. So I'd love to recommend something that just came out. It's a book called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World by Olga Kazan, who is one of my favorite writers from The Atlantic and just a lovely human being. I had a chance to meet her, I think, once in my life. And she seemed like a really lovely person. And this book is about kind of how she was able to harness her secret superpower of always feeling a little bit weird and a little out of place. And it starts out with her describing her childhood as a Russian Jewish immigrant in Midland, Texas, where there are no Jews, there are no Russians, and they just really stuck out as a family. And then she has interviews with all of these interesting people who managed to usually succeed, but not always. She's actually quite careful to have a balance of stories. Who are different, who stand out in their chosen professions, in their chosen hobbies, in their line of work, and who end up thriving and using that weirdness to find kind of hidden skills within themselves. I think it's a very fun read. It's a very interesting read. It introduces you to, you know, female race car drivers and a lot of just really fascinating characters.
I'm a huge fan of her work, so I'm really excited to read that book. I love her work at The Atlantic, so. KJ, what have you been reading?
I read a fun novel. I read The Authenticity Project by Claire Pooley. I did a little video about it on my Instagram last week, if anyone wants to check that out. That's at KJDA, but it's... So the premise of the book is that someone writes what they're really thinking at the beginning of a notebook that they label the Authenticity Project and start leaving it around for other people to write what they're really thinking. And I love that when I tell you that, the person you're envisioning as someone who would start that novel or that project, especially in a current commercial novel, is not who's in this book. It has a lot of unexpected elements. It was extremely fun. It's got just enough expected elements to make it satisfying. Anyway, I recommend it. It was a good distracting, which we all need, but very smart read.
I've been, and we should probably do a full disclosure here. So we are recording this podcast in April, although we will not be releasing it until closer to the release date for Maria's book. So it's a little bit weird. We are still deep in pandemic mode and have been locked away. And
we managed not to talk about it, though.
Huh?
We managed not to talk about it. Like, you know,
we managed,
you alluded to it, but that was all.
I know.
Which is awesome.
I'm very proud of us. I'm very, yeah, very proud of us.
Yeah, we're bored with it by now.
But I've been reading lighter stuff. I've been reading sort of like rom-com-y type of stuff. But one book that I do want to recommend is a book that comes out in May. So by the time this comes out, it will have come out already, called Sunny Days by David Camp, K-A-M-P. And he is a writer at Vanity Fair, and he dives into children's television and the beginnings of Sesame Street and the beginnings of Zoom and some of the other, Mr. Rogers and Free to Be You and Me and Schoolhouse Rock, and how that all got started, and sort of the genesis of Sesame Street. And it's a really lovely book. I highly recommend it if you're at all interested in that kind of stuff. So that's my recommendation.
That sounds great.
All right. Maria, thank you again so, so much for being on the podcast. And congratulations on just, I have been following along on this journey since it was first announced you were writing this book. And I've been so excited to read it because, you know, as you well know, you know, when people get involved in your story and start rooting for you, we become invested. And I've been so invested in this story. And so getting the book in the mail was this incredible gift because I finally got to find out what was behind all of those cool pictures of you with your patches for your professional poker sponsors and, you know, all the cool stuff that you got to do. So so congratulations on all of it.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. I hope that others can go on the journey with us.
It's I also like it as a story about being brave and diving into something that you're not sure you're even going to be good at from the beginning. And I've even told my students when that I was teaching about the fact that, you know, you went out to write this book about poker and became a professional poker player, and they thought that was pretty cool. So anyway, you've inspired more than just me by your story. So thank you for writing it.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was a real pleasure.
Absolutely. And everyone who's listening, until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Thank you.